Well, good morning, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. And for the next 2 hours, we're going to be talking about cars. And we're happy to talk about your car or what kind of new car. And as long as you give me choices. So if you're looking for a new sport utility vehicle, give me two choices. If you're looking for a pickup truck, give me a couple of choices. And from my point of view, it's more of a maintenance issue. Which ones do we work on the most? Which ones do we work on the least? What motors are good? What motors are historically costly to repair? Stuff like that. And tires. We can talk about tires. We can talk about oil. We can do any of that. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. We have five lines available. Gil, our engineer, will be handling the phone calls, and then he'll whisper in my ear what your name is, and we'll get to you just as quickly as we can. 602-508-0960. This portion of Under the Hood is brought to you by Action Auto Repair. Tom at Action Auto Repair is located at I-17 in Deer Valley. He's a full-service, family-owned auto repair shop that served the Deer Valley and North Phoenix area since 1983. And I've known Tom since the late 70s and early 80s, and he's a good guy. He's the kind of guy you'd want as your neighbors, as a neighbor. His technicians have ASE Master certification, and that means that they're seasoned and they've taken tests that have been very difficult to pass. And they've passed them in all eight categories that the automobile and light truck contains. So if you're a front-end, ASE front-end specialist, then you've only qualified in one test of the eight. So to do all eight, then you become a master. And those guys usually know, probably 90% of them, they really know their craft really, really well. Action Auto Repair, I-17 and Deer Valley. And we've already got a caller.
Yes, say hello to Cap.
Cap, good morning to you. How can I help you?
Hey, I've got a 2000 Honda Accord EX, and it has 151, almost 152,000 miles on it. It was garaged for most of its life, the beginning years, for an older lady. The car works magnificent, except for what it's doing now is the air conditioner. Obviously in here in Phoenix it's pretty hot, so you turn the car on and it will not work. But after about maybe 10 minutes of running the car, it'll start working, and I've thrown it to 60 degrees, I've thrown it to 70 degrees. It will not blow out cold air until after it feels like it's warmed up. So I was just wondering if that's common problem, when the air conditioner gets old, it needs to be replaced. What am I looking at?
Well, there's 150 different reasons why, but this is what you need to do. You need to open up the hood and find the compressor. That shouldn't be too hard. And there's a small line that goes to it and a big fat line that goes to it. The big fat line is the one I'm concerned with. Now, if you touch the small one and you touch the small one when the motor's running and stuff like that, then it's just going to be hot. That's all. It's not going to burn you. It's not going to shock you. It's just going to be hot. I want the cold one. So the real question is when you start it up and you turn on the air conditioning, you got to get out, open up the hood, and grab a hold of the suction line, the cold line. Is it cold? And if it isn't, just keep your hands on it. Now, it may come off the compressor with metal, then it goes into rubber, and then it goes into metal again. It's okay for you to go upstream. I don't want your hands around the fan belts, but just find the fat side of the compressor. And that's what we got to do. We have to determine is that compressor working or not. And if you say, Mark, I hold on to that line for 3, 4, 5 minutes before it gets cold, it's good news because it gets cold. The bad news is why is it taking so long? And the most likely reason would be a Freon level. And it's just taken a while to build up pressure on the low side and the high side appropriately to make cold air. Now, it doesn't mean that you should go out and buy a can of Freon and put in there, and don't put any stop leak in there either, because that never works. And that's one of the greatest marketing schemes or scams I've ever seen in my life. But nevertheless, that's what needs to be done. Now, if you come back and you say, it's really, really cold, At the very beginning, but my wife's inside and her hand's in front of the dash and it's not getting cold, then there's a strong possibility underneath the dash. I want you to picture the letter Y, okay? On the top left arm of Y is cold air, and on the right side of the letter Y is hot air. And so when we want cold, right at the confluence of where the two verticals on the Y meet the two branches of the Y meet the trunk of the tree, we have a blend door there. And the blend door's job is based on the command you give it off of your climate control panel, it's supposed to close off hot and give you cold, or close off cold and give you hot. So that could be it as well, especially because it's an older car. It's 18 years old, and it's got the 150,000 miles on the clock. So that's what you can do to, if you're going to hire a shop to do it, he would love for you to come in and give him that information, because you saved yourself some diagnostic money because you've already helped him do something that he would have otherwise done himself.
Well, who do you recommend in the Phoenix area?
Well, give me a closer geographical location.
Like northern Phoenix, like around Arcadia?
Are you close to 25th and Indian School?
Yes.
Okay. Billy over at 25th Street Auto can, I know he could fix this. I know Dave Martin at 16th Street in Osborne, I know he could fix this.
I'm sorry, what was the name of the company with Billy?
Billy is 25th Street Auto.
Oh, 25th Auto,
yeah,
okay.
25th Street in Indian School. I know he could fix it. I know Dave Martin could fix it. He's at 16th Street in Osborne. I know Kelly Clark at 12th in Glendale, he could fix that. All three of those guys I've known for really long time. And so I know that you know, we all talk and we all share successes and we all share failures and we all learn from one another from an owner's perspective, but they can help you. And here's what I'm betting. I'm betting you got a freon level problem, and this is what I would suggest you do. We have electronic dipsticks today that we've never had before, so I have this machine that I paid more for this machine than I paid for my first car. Three times as much as... But this machine will suck all the freon out of your car. They'll weigh it, clean it, remove the moisture in the metal, and then it'll say, okay, I got 8 ounces, and I look at the tag, and you take 14. So then I just put your freon back in, and I add the difference.
Oh,
and that works. We never understood how important it is to be perfect. And in the days of old, you could ask 20 technicians how they know it's full, and you would get 18 answers. Oh, the low side is this, the high side is, and the low side has pressures, and usually from probably 20 or 30 up to maybe 60, 70, 80. The high side pressures could go from 100 to 400 pounds. Also, everybody has different temperatures. Some guys go, well, the ambient temperature is important. Oh, yeah, I want to service it at 80. No, I want to service it at 100. Well, where do you get 100? Well, I get it in Phoenix. So all those moving things. And then if you put too much oil in the system, you can put the exact amount of freon in it, and it's still not going to cool. So you have to get the oil out of it. So you have all these dynamics. But this new machine, and I'll tell you that when I give you a price, I'm taking my price, and I'm... because I'm far away from you. I'm taking my price, and I'm adding a little on the low and a little on the high to cover the range that you're likely to see. And so I'm thinking, depending on your freon level that you're going to need, I think you're going to spend somewhere around $125 for the service. But you're not going to pay for the freon they take out and give you back, because that's yours in the first place. And so they're just going to top it off. And the success rate, and the guys that I've talked to, and my personal success rate, has been 95%.
Oh, wow.
I mean, we're making cars blow ice cubes that people say is different. Now, 55 degrees is center vent temperature when you're going down the road at least 45 miles an hour. If you're sitting there at 51, then you're wasting your time spending money on that system, because 55 is kind of the number. On the other hand, your Honda Accord, we've seen those guys get down in the low 40s, and if you slow the fan speed down a little bit, of course, then you're just whispering across the ice cube. Does that make sense? So if I just gently blow across the ice cube, you're going to get colder air. But if I turn on this giant vacuum cleaner and put it on the exhaust side of the vacuum cleaner, there's not going to be cold air. We're going to melt the ice cube. So you pick a fan speed in the middle, drive it 45 miles an hour, go buy one of those silly little round thermostats, a temperature thing that you can buy at any auto parts store for a couple of bucks, stick it in the center vent, and that'll help you determine whether you're acceptable or not.
What is this machine called if I take it somewhere and I say I want them to do that?
Just say, do you have the ability to recover my refrigerant, clean it, and put it back in, and then add or subtract the deficiency? Because,
okay,
frankly, it has 100 different names. But basic, it's a newer machine. It's only been out for a year, maybe two.
I just assumed you meant like 5-10 years.
No. It's a brand new machine, and it's very expensive. They run between $6,000 and $10,000. So,
oh, wow.
And look at it from our point of view. This is like I gave it the name electronic dipstick because this is it. This is what we've always wanted. And here's what that machine does. And I'll tell you the truth. It makes us look like we're heroes. Because when you put exactly the amount of the Freon, it inevitably, if you follow up with a phone call, you have, you know, somebody follow up your customer, how do we do? They say, oh, it's I don't believe it's ever blown this cold. So
1 minute.
We understand without question that the precise amount is everything with respect to most cars. And that's something you only do when you need to do it. It's not a maintenance item. You don't do it every year. You don't do it every 2 years. You do it when there's a degradation of the cold air coming out. And you don't make that decision when we're 120 degrees on Fahrenheit on the exterior side, the ambient temperature. So, all righty?
Well, thank you very much. That was really helpful.
You're welcome. You're welcome, Cap. Thank you very much. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. Automotive Dynamics is Sun City's largest and most trusted source for complete auto repair. Family owned and operated since 1982. Chuck Nidey opened it, and I've known Chuck Nidey since 1968. His son Derek is now running it because Chuck's just too ornery to be in front of people, and I said that with a smile. But Derek is a protege of Chuck in all the finest ways. So, Automotive Dynamics has been around a long time. They're on the north side of Grand at 99th Avenue. And Derek has made the decision, and I think this is an honorable one, that the staff and the technicians are not paid a commission or a percentage of a repair bill. Therefore, Derek can ensure they don't sell you unnecessary parts or repairs. That's something new. All of us are watching Derek about that. We're watching to see how that affects his bottom line, if it does at all. But that's a great idea. So nevertheless, if you want to talk cars, 602-508-0960. We'll be back in a minute. Well, it's 21 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock, and we're going to be here till noon. If you want to talk about cars, you can, 602-508-0960. But let me talk about a good shop just for a second, and then we're going to get to two callers that we have. Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing has been around in Mesa. The family, Thompson's and the Vivian family, and they're married there somewhere. They've been in business for a very long time. I can date Cecil back to the 1968 and the Vivians back to 1968, which is where I started at a gas station at a very young age. Nevertheless, Thompson's has been around Mesa. He's the only shop in Mesa that I personally put my name behind because they deserve it. They've been providing expert auto repair, light truck maintenance services to Mesa for a very long time. They have ASE certified technicians. They follow up with friendly reminders. They do a really good job. And all you have to do is meet Brian or Thelma, husband and wife, who run the operation, to know why I like them so much. So Thompson's is on Main Street just east of Stapley. Main Street just east of Stapley on the south side of the road. Good morning, Bob. How can I help you this morning?
Hi, Mark. Is a 2014 GMC pickup with a 5.3 V8, is that a gasoline direct injection engine?
I don't think so, but I've been wrong before. Why are you worried about the gasoline direct injection?
Well, I looked around the internet, and my research wasn't real extensive, but I kind of got the idea it was. But you know the problem with the valves where they, like, load up on the gasoline direct injection engines, you know?
They do.
What symptoms do you get if you have that problem?
It's real simple. It's an idle problem. It's a drivability problem. The engine basically runs like poo-poo.
What can a car owner do to prevent or delay that? I mean, change your oil more frequently?
Nope.
Change your spark plug more frequently?
Nope. Here, let me tell you what's going on. The valve opens and closes. The valve has a long stem and a big fat head. We open and close the valve. We used to introduce the fuel and air mixture behind the valve. Okay? So when the valve opens up, we allow air and fuel to rush by the back side of the valve. Now, we have to lubricate that stem as it moves in and out of the motor, out of the head. Well, we run a little bit of oil down that stem. Okay? So the gasoline, as it runs by the back of the oil, at the valve, it picks up a little bit of that oil and sends it into the cylinder, which is no harm, no foul. Okay? Now, we're going to take the injector out from behind the valve, and we're going to put it in the cylinder. And so we have this oil that's coming down the valve stem that we absolutely have to have. But we no longer are washing that small, not even a drip, just a piece about the thickness of what you put chapstick on your lip, on half your upper lip. It's just, but we don't have the gasoline washing that down into the motor. So now what we've got is we've got this growth of black carbon at the back of the intake manifold that grows and grows and grows and grows. What can you do about it? Well, you could spend thousands of dollars having guys that have purchased fancy machines to clean the back of your intake valves. I think that's a bad idea. They are working on a variety of fixes today. This has been going on for 2 or 3 years. So we're going to figure this out. We just haven't figured out how we're going to figure it out. And we haven't figured out how we're going to either slow that oil on the valve stem, on the valve guide, to where it doesn't do it. Or are we going to go to the oil manufacturers and say to them, will you help us get rid of this? Or if we're going to do a gasoline additive that's going to help us get rid of this, we just don't know. But in reality, it's not the injector and it's not the gasoline. That's not the problem. The problem is we're no longer washing that oil off the back side of the intake valve. Now, next question you want to ask me is, hey, Mark, how many of those have you seen? And I'm going to tell you that I see 100 cars a week, so about 5,200 cars a year, and I've probably seen 3 of those in the last 12 months, and that's all. So in the Internet, it's a big deal, but in reality, chances of it happening to most people are slim and none. Obviously, the cars that are on the highway are probably going to do a little better than the stop-and-go ones, but I don't think your 5.3, I just got a text from somebody I trust, and I don't think your 5.3 has a direct injection at all.
Okay. All right, thanks.
All right, you betcha. Direct injection. It's an idea to put the fuel right in the cylinder. It's an idea that, and let me tell you about engineers. Engineers, they don't really know everything in the world, because you can have an engineer and he has a hydrology focus, but he knows electrical, mechanical, he knows water, he knows hydraulics, he knows weather, he knows dirt and sand. But really and truly, when they call them engineers, they mean that they drive the locomotive for Union Pacific. Some engineer is in big trouble for designing this direct injection because of the problems that it has created. And right now the aftermarket's jumping on with all these fancy machines that we're going to clean the back of your intake valve. So bring it over here, and for $199 or $299 or $399, we're going to fix it. The problem is nobody knows if you have it. So to be talked into that kind of a backside service of your intake valves and have it done every 6 months is a huge waste of money. And I don't own the machine, and I don't intend to buy it either. Michael, you're up next. How can I help you?
Good morning, Mark. Buick Centuries are noted for their fuel injectors plugging up and having to take them out and replace, cost of several hundred dollars. I was wondering if LaCrosse and Lucerne have that problem too.
I'm not familiar with fuel injectors being a problem. Is this a port fuel injection you're talking about? Is this a throttle body fuel injection?
Don't know those terms.
Okay. All right. Well, a throttle body only has a big carburetor-looking thing with 2 injectors on the top.
It's a 3.1 six-cylinder 2000 okay. Buick Century.
All right. I don't know where you're getting your information, but I disagree with that in a big way.
If
you're worried about this is called YouTube University. This is called internet chatter that has no basis, no fundamental. The other day, I was on the internet and I was working on a car, and I thought, you know what? I'm going to see what they say. I mean to tell you, I found, and I went in and I, you could do
2 minutes.
Puig LaCrosse injectors. You're going to find all kinds of stuff out there. You don't know if the person is a baker or a candlestick maker. You don't know if he's a dentist. You don't know who he is. You don't know anything about, he could be a landscaper, but everybody's an expert on the internet. So I went in and looked at this particular problem I had, and yes, there was at least 20 different people that said that they repaired that problem. And they were all talking about the same problem. The issue that I have is, I know the problem, and there's only one fix, and it's really easy to find. But yet you got 19 other people that said that they fixed a mass airflow sensor, or they put a new vacuum booster on it, or they put all new oxygen sensors on it, and that fixed it. And I know that that's just flat out BS. So that's kind of what we're at. It's and I'm not the only one. Everybody tells me of a professional nature, like the dentists and the candlestick makers and the bakers and all that. They tell me the same thing. People come in and say, don't put any yeast in my bread. Okay, well, where'd you read that on the internet? That's the kind of stuff we're up against. But if you're worried about your Buick and you're worried about injectors, you should worry about an atom bomb. You should worry about a big-time problem and forget that one, because that's not going to bite you. And there's nothing you can do about it. If an injector shorts out, it's because the coil and the electronic part of it failed. And there's nothing, and the fuel doesn't even touch that part of the injector, so there's nothing to do with that. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. If you have a car question or a car problem, now's the time to get on, because nobody's on, and Gil is the one that'll answer the phone, and he'll ask you your name, and then he'll put you in queue, and I'll take you in order in the time you called. So again, the phone number is 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. My name's Mark Salem. I've got 39 years in the automotive repair industry. I actually started as a kid in 1968, but I don't count that time. And I'll tell you something else. I'm an ASE Master Certified Technician for more than 30 years. I've been there, and I've done that. After the hour of 10 o'clock, Mark Salem here, and we're going to go straight to the phones like we promised, and we're going to start with Doug. Doug, good morning. How can I help you?
Hey, good morning, Mark. Thanks for taking the call. Here a 2002 Chevy Silverado 1500, just the base model, that's had a transmission rebuilt in it, and now it's leaking out of the yoke. Out of the weep hole in the yoke. After they rebuilt the transmission, this is what we started having a problem with when parked in the driveway with the front end, up a little bit.
Okay, well, the obvious question is why not just take it back to the shop that just had the thing out?
Well, we did that, and they're the ones that said that was leaking from the yoke, and I actually had it up on the lift when I went there and looked at it. For some reason, they seem to think that they just took it back for the leaking problem, and they come back with pulling the drive shaft out and rebuilding the drive shaft.
Okay, well, you need to stop going to them, and you should have probably done a little bit more homework before you had them rebuild your transmission. There's a bushing inside the tail shaft of the transmission, so most guys are capable of just wiggling the drive shaft and feeling if there's too much play. Sometimes there's an O-ring that surrounds the yoke that goes in the back of the transmission, and if the O-ring wasn't replaced, or if the O-ring is rock hard, then it's going to leak back there. So rebuilding the drive shaft is a silly and stupid idea. I'm telling you that up front. So somebody just needs to figure out if it's the O-ring. And then the third thing is the seal. So we have an O-ring and a seal, and we have a bushing back there. How many miles on it when they rebuilt the transmission?
108.5. Okay. And it's maybe had another 100 miles added to it in the last 3 months.
Okay, well, that's not important with the system, the problem on the table. But you may have to have somebody fix it, and then after you have them fix it, take the bill back to them and say, this is what I paid to have it fixed, and it's been a month, and it hasn't leaked a drop, and I did not have the drive shaft replaced. And so I would very much like give you the opportunity to make this right, because you missed the problem in the beginning, then you misdiagnosed it the second time, and now I've got it fixed and I've got 30 days behind my belt. So I'll give you this, and I'll call you in 24 hours, and you can tell me what you're thinking about. That's what I would do if I were you. And then if not, and they don't want to do that, and you had it fixed, and it's been dry for 30 days, then get on the internet and do whatever people do to businesses that don't perform at their level of service. That's how I'd handle it. Thanks.
Right.
Okay.
Can I talk to you 1 second off air?
No, you can't. I got too many callers behind you. But thank you very much, Doug. Russ, you're up next. How can I help you, Russ?
Hi, Mark. I have a 2011 Honda Element, and I have an intermittent squeak under the front dash, and I just can't figure out where it's coming from. And it happens in the cold weather, and it happens in hot weather, but not in temperate weather.
Okay. You know, there's just nothing I can do to help you out on this. I think what I would want you to do is learn how to make it happen. Do I hit a bump?
Yeah.
Do I turn right? Do I turn left? And then
2 minutes.
I also want you to change things. So I want you to turn off the air. And once you learn how to make it happen, turn the air off. Then turn the heater on. And I want you to pound gently on the top of the dashboard. I want you to reach down between your legs and take your fist and hit the bottom of the dash panel with your top of your fist. Because these are things you got. Here's the deal. If I said to you, I can fix this, Russ, but I'm going to have to take your dashboard apart and look for things that rub, and I'm going to give you an estimate of $200 to $250, I'm pretty sure you're going to live with the squeak for a while more.
Well, I don't know. It's pretty annoying.
Okay.
I'm almost at the point where if it happens again, I'm just going to take it to somebody and go, find this thing.
There's some air conditioning ductwork underneath there that feeds the vent to your left side of your dash. That's the first thing I would do is go in and reposition that. Then the question is better, worse, or the same? And once you do that, then if all of a sudden it's better, then at least somebody knows they pull the ductwork out, they put some felt, or they tape both ends of it, and they make sure the speedometer cable is not rubbing on the ductwork, and you're done. So that is some. But as you and I both know, this isn't anything that's going to break you down or cause you the need to call a tow truck. So it's not a safety issue. And, you know, a set of earplugs are really cheap. You know what I mean? And they work really well. They work really well when the lady next door to you is chewing on your tail end because she doesn't like your driving. Those earplugs are really beneficial then. Thank you, Russ. Thank you very much. George and Jay, stay right there because I'm going to come back in just a minute. Gil, we're going to go early on this break, and then I'm going to take George and Jay, 602-508-0960, for anybody else. My name's Mark Salem. It's 43 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. I'm an ASE Master Certified Technician. I've been repairing cars for 39 years, and I own a repair shop, but I don't tell you about that because that's not what this show's about. This show's about you and your problems. Now, let me clear something up real quick before we go to George. We had a gentleman call in that had a transmission rebuilt in town, and he had a leak, and he took it back, and they blamed it on the drive shaft. I would disagree with that. We talked about it. Then at the end of the conversation, he wanted to talk to me off air. There's a good chance he's talking about one of the shops that's on my list. I'll tell him in public what I'll tell you. Go get the, if they won't fix it, make sure they won't fix it. Then go get it fixed. Wait 30 days. Make sure that it's fixed. Then file a nice complaint with the Better Business Bureau. It'll probably go to the Auto Advisory Committee, a committee that I created the parameters for 20 years ago. I wrote the rules for the committee, myself and Ruth Zemek, who was with the Better Business Bureau and has since retired. Now, if the Better Business Bureau and the Auto Advisory Committee tells the shop to give you a refund, then the shop has to. If they don't, I kick the shop off my list, and I will give you the refund up to $5,000. It's never happened since 1988. Never happened. I've come close once, but it's never happened. Now, there's already two shops on my list that I've kicked off, and all the story is right there on the list. The bottom line is I don't put up with shenanigans, but I think the reason he wanted to talk to me off the air was because it was probably one of my transmission shops. But there's a procedure there on the internet to do, and that's what I want to do. I'm not afraid of conflict. I'm just not going to discuss that kind of stuff on the air or off the air. It's better handled in an environment that I'm not involved in. George, thank you for holding. How can I help you?
Hey, Mark, how you doing?
Good.
Quick question. I have an 04 Ford Taurus. It's got the Duratec engine.
Okay. Okay.
V6 DuraTec. And anyways, 98,000 miles, original miles, really a clean car. It's a station wagon. But I had a bad ignition coil. Each spark plug has a coil, okay? Had the engine light on, found out it was an ignition coil, and went ahead and replaced those. And while I had that, you know, plenum off or intake manifold, I went ahead and replaced the plugs, okay? They needed it. I went to AutoZone.
Let's get to the end of this, though. I mean, okay, I understand all that. Where are we at today?
Well, I thought I'd give you a background on the car. But anyways, I replaced the plugs, and they said that the car called for an iridium plug, okay?
Okay.
And when I pulled the old plugs out, they were platinum, okay? I put the iridium plugs in, and the car runs great. But when I first started, here's the point. When I first start the car and it's cold, there's a slight popping sound, or it's very momentary, and it doesn't affect the operation of the car, but it's very momentary. It's almost like a very low tone boom, like boom, or popping. And the only thing that I think that I did different was switch the plugs from platinum to iridium.
Stop. None of this makes any difference. As far as your iridium spark plugs, they sold you iridium because they're a whole lot more than the platinums. It's not going to be a spark plug unless you did something wrong to the spark plug and broke the insulator. I don't know why you put all the spark plugs and all the coils in it, but I need to know, did you put the boots in it?
Well, the coil comes with the boot.
Okay.
Okay. The coil comes with
the boot. That's fine. Then chase the noise. Forget everything else. Chase the noise. It doesn't really make any difference for you to... I mean, you've already spent a whole lot more money than you would have spent anywhere else, because none of us would have replaced all your coils. None of us would have replaced all your spark plugs. I mean, that's you're doing this shotgun repair, and now you have a new problem that you didn't have before. And you can go ahead and change all the spark plugs back to platinum. You can, but you've already spent more money than any of us would have charged you to diagnose it and fix it. So the rest of it is just a lot of conversation. But we need to get to the gist of the issue, and the issue is I did a bunch of ignition and coils and boots, and I now have iridium instead of platinum, and therefore I've got this noise. And obviously it's a little difficult for me to do noises on the radio, but chase the noise, okay? Just chase the noise. Forget about all that other stuff. If it's related, when you get there, you'll know it. But for you to keep messing with the same situation, chances of you fixing the noise are slim and none. Anyway, thanks, George. We got to go to Dan. Dan, good morning to you. What is it you got on your mind?
Yeah, my 77 Power Wagon.
Okay.
It's got a brake issue.
Okay.
As I stop sign and or light, my foot's on the brake pedal, it'll hit that resistance point right where we get pushback.
Uh-huh.
But sometimes I feel my vehicle moving and I put pressure on the brake pedal, it'll slowly head toward the floor. Okay. The vehicle won't move, it will stop, but the pedal's almost to the floor. And
okay.
This happens.
You have a bad master cylinder.
Okay. And at one of your garages, I won't mention the names, but I'll be going there and he wants to make it happen. It happens when it wants to.
Okay. Well, you have two choices. The pedal fade into the floor and the fluid level is fine and there's no external leaks, it can only be the master. But there's a lot of us that do want to experience it. And frankly, I'm quite sure that there's a lot of us out there that can sit in that truck or go drive around the block for 20 minutes and we can get it to happen. You need to determine if you're going to show him. You need to determine if it's a light application and then it fades, or if it's kind of a medium application and it holds or fades, or a heavy application and it holds and fades. But pop the lid. If the fluid is good, it's not empty, then it's got a master cylinder that's bypassing. And if you say that I hold it and everything's fine, and then if it starts fading, I stay with the pedal, and it goes all the way down, and then there's kind of a click, and then the truck starts moving. Then I let go and I hit the brake pedal again. Guess what? It's firm. Those are classic symptoms of a master cylinder that's bypassing. Now, if you tell them to do the master cylinder and that isn't it, I'm not paying for it. But you've given me a great symptom list, and what you've said matches perfectly. a master cylinder. Okay?
I believe so. One other question, okay. Quick. Been a lot of garages. Your garage waiting room is the Hilton. I sat 4 hours outside one the other day, 4 hours in a plastic chair. I guess that's just up to the owner, isn't it?
Well, no. I got to give credit where credit's due. I am so very proud of my daughter, my son, and my wife of creating the lobby that we have at our shop. It has 40 years of history in it. If you look, we've got ball caps from, you know, our transition from Ahwatukee Mobile all the way to who we are today. And we have lots of old car stuff that's from the 20s and the 30s and the 40s. And then we have old cans of oil that were from the 60s and the 70s. So, and we have newspapers, and we have free soda pop and water. We have all of that. But in reality, it wasn't Mark Salem. Mark Salem is a greasy-fingered mechanic. It was Renee, my wife, Andy, my daughter, and Alan, my son. They're the ones that put the lobby together. But I'm going to cut this out of the tape and give it to them because you're the first person that said that. Thank you.
One of the good garages was very old, and it just wasn't designed to have a luxurious waiting room.
Yeah, you know, tell me how old you think our shop is.
Well, I'm not talking about years. I'm talking when I went to that you recommended.
No, I understand that. But
on your shop, yeah. I don't know, 20 years?
It's actually 25. It's 25 years old. We built it. It's almost 25 years old. We built it in 1994, and we opened up in January of 1994. So, and it looks nice, and that has another group to it because there's another group of people that take care of the shop. So my job is to get the cars in and out. Their job is to make it look pretty. So anyway, thank you for that, Dan. Thank you very much. Charlie, you're up next. Charlie, how can I help you?
You're going to think I'm really crazy, but I think this is for one of your kids or your grandkids. Why don't you produce, with your name on it, some of these YouTube-type videos for people like myself? I've been on YouTube and watched some of this stuff, and some of it is pretty bad. But with your name on something like that and your reputation and somebody that can really make a good how-to type video, I think you got a real huge market for something like that. But okay. It's got to have, you know, somebody like you that everybody knows.
Okay, I have three comments. First of all, thank you. That's a fine compliment. Thank you. If you go, I know it's difficult sometimes for people, but Instagram, and this is what happens in Instagram. The technicians have to take a camera, and they have to photograph the old part next to the new part. So a broken motor mount next to the new one. A plugged up condenser next to the new one. A heater core that's leaking next to the new one. And then my daughter Andy posts those on Instagram. And so you can look at a bad motor mount. You can look at the leaking heater core. And we do that 2 and 3 times a day. Now, what you're talking about, I started television here locally in probably 1989 or 90. I started radio here locally in 1988. I understand that you're paying me a great compliment, but let me tell you just between you and me. I have so much work. I've been blessed with so much work that the last thing I need is 40 new customers walking in the door. There's, as it stands right now, 2 new ones walk in the door every day, and we can manage that. But, and I also have lots of YouTube, or I have lots of videos out there about car stuff. But to be perfectly honest with you, that would occupy a lot of my time, and there would be tremendous satisfaction as far as I was concerned. But there wouldn't be any income stream, and as I approach the Social Security age, I'm looking for a way to spend more times with my horses and being out on in the pastures with them than I am with the media exposure. But I agree with you on one thing, and that is the YouTube kind of stuff just bothers me to death because people will come in and tell us to fix their car based on, you know, John from YouTube, and that's clearly not a good idea, but it is what it is, and I don't know if this will ever fix, but if it doesn't, it's okay with me, because I get a lot of cars after they spend hundreds and hundreds of dollars trying to fix them, and they can't, and they bring it to us, and it's no secret that I get great joy out of fixing their cars for $89.26 after they spent $400 guessing. And so that's the exception. That's not the rule. But anyway, well, thank you. Thank you, Charlie. I'm going to write down Charlie with a compliment in capital letters. Thank you, Charlie. Dick, you're up next. How can I help you?
Hi, how are you? I really love your show. You do an excellent job. You really do.
Thank you.
Hey, I've got two questions real quick. Number one, I'm looking to purchase a vehicle. I'm going to take, and I want something in a sedan, and also in addition to that, a pickup. For you, because you know, I trust you, number one. Number two, I think you've got more knowledge than anybody out there, and the viewing public, we totally trust you. What would you recommend for me to purchase? You know, maybe something that's gas efficient, you know, like maybe a six-cylinder fuel injected, something like that for a sedan.
Okay, let's start with the truck first. Is this truck going to haul anything?
No, it's just going to be, you know, get me from point A to point B. I've been driving pickups for years. I like it.
Okay. And so if it's not going to be hauling anything, I'll tell you that the really nice pickup trucks is Toyota. Minutes. Toyota makes a really good pickup truck. I don't know that there's a small pickup truck that rivals Toyota in any other brand. So I hate to, you know, jump on the, I hate to expose myself to all the American-made flag-waving guys, but you're asking me a question, I'm giving you an answer. We have, I mean, you could step up to the F-150, you could certainly step up to the Dodge, you could step up to the small Chevys, all of those are good, but if you keep them forever, and this is going to be a truck that you're going to keep forever, I think you're far better off to get the Toyota than anything else. Okay. I drive a Dodge. Most of my fleet, I have a Dodge shuttle bus, but most of my fleet is Chevrolets. And I'll tell you, I'm real proud of this. I have two Chevy S10 4.3-liter little pickup trucks that we use for go get parts and stuff. And both of them have north of 200,000 miles on them. Now, they're not necessarily the prettiest trucks in the world, but I'm pretty doggone proud because we bought those right after we opened our shop in the mid-90s. And so they're trucks that have given us really good service. And someday I'll put them out to pasture when the motor falls out the bottom of the engine cradle. But on the sedan, I need you to give me a close on the sedan. Get me closer.
It takes the family back and forth, you know, something that's going to, you know, I want something that's going to protect them, you know.
I know, but there's got to be 15 different, four-door sedans out there. I need, you know, give me, I'm going to put you on hold, but give me three choices. Think about it during the break here. Give me three choices. Give me, just give me three choices. Give me three models, and we'll talk about them. A V6 is something I always tell people. You're going to love a V6 better than you like a four-cylinder. And then there's three different levels of quality. You can get the base model, the middle of the model, and then you get full leather and music that tickles your ears and all that other kind of stuff. So there's lots of options out there, and the options are personal in nature. But as far as the sedans are concerned, I mean, I like Hyundai. I think Ford has a good sedan. I think Dodge has a good sedan. I have all those, but just think about it during the break, and I'll go to you first on the other side of the break. But just give me some parameters. Think about the cars you've had before. Think about the cars that you've seen. And are you talking about a sport utility vehicle, or are you talking about a station wagon? Because there's not too many station wagons out there, but there's a whole lot of four-door. And then you have to decide two-wheel drive or four-wheel drive. And then you have to decide a lot of other things. But we can get through all of that. But just I want to put you on hold and just think about that. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. That's the number you can call in if you have a car question. We've got another hour's worth of the show, and we'll be back right after this. Welcome back, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock, we've got four lines open, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. And if you have a car question or car problem, we'll do our best to help you and point you into the right direction. We're going to get to Dick in just about 30 seconds, but I want to tell you about Kurtz Auto Repair. We have repair shops pretty much all around the valley that I recommend. And so for those of you on the I-17 corridor up near Bell, Kurtz Automotive is on the northeast corner of Bell and I-17. He does really great work on gas and diesel. He's a master tech. Eric's a master tech. Jeff's a master tech. And the two younger guys are the future of our industry. And they are smart as smart can get. And they have a huge grip on how cars are supposed to work, and they understand the fundamentals of all the different systems, air conditioning, ignition delivery, spark delivery, timing delivery, all that stuff. So if you're anywhere near I-17 and Bell and you don't already have a shop that you love, you're new to the area, may I suggest Kurt's Auto Repair, and that's again on the northeast corner of Bell and I-17. And by the way, he was a Better Business Bureau Ethic Award winner not too long ago, and I think that says a whole lot about Kurtz. Hey, Dick, are you there?
Yeah.
Dick, I want to ask you a question.
Sure, go ahead.
Have you started shopping yet?
Yeah, a little bit. I've been looking.
Okay. And have you been driving any of them and taking them for 15 or 20 minutes?
No, I haven't gone that far yet.
Okay.
I want to narrow the field down to a few selections and then go drive it, and then I'll make the decision from there.
Okay.
All right. I'm looking for four-wheel drive, four-door. What do you think of that Land Rover?
Well, now I need three price ranges: economical, middle of the road, and the top end.
Top end.
Okay, then the Land Rover or the Honda Pilot are two of them I'd look at.
Okay. Land Rover and Honda, what do you call it? Honda?
Pilot. The Pilot. And doesn't Pilot. Toyota have a Highlander or something like that that is a big four-door, four-wheel drive? I'm pretty sure it does.
Right.
And so, yeah, the Honda Pilot's the top end. I would look at, and I don't know what the top end on the Hyundai is. I don't know, but I can tell you a lot of my customers like the Hyundai line. And I can tell you that that's not a car that we have to call with thousands of dollars worth of repair estimates. I know that my guys kind of like to work on them because they don't have major failures that take all kinds of different circuits out. And that goes for the three that we're talking about as well. So
right.
That's okay. And then here's last. It's all-wheel drive or four-wheel drive?
And four-wheel drive.
Okay. You know the difference?
No.
Okay, all-wheel drive, there's no such thing as four-wheel drive because it's in four-wheel drive all the time. The problem with all-wheel drive is if you blow one tire accidentally, you have to buy four because the circumference of each tire has to be the same. So, like, my wife has a Tahoe, and she swears that the boogeyman jumped into the driver's seat and kissed a curb and cut the sidewall on one of the tires. But because the tire was, like, 65% worn, I had to replace four of them, and she's got fancy tires and wheels. And by the time I got done with my cost on that, it was almost $850. So a four-wheel drive allows you to go into two-wheel drive and only use four-wheel drive when you need the extra traction.
Right.
So if you have the option, then I would go with just the four-wheel drive. I wouldn't go with the all-wheel drive.
Okay, sounds good. Thank you, Mark. I appreciate it very much.
Thank you, Dick. Thank you very much. All righty. And folks, when you go buy a car, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. First of all, I want to tell you something. I'm up at the ranch, and during the break, I don't know if you know what a turkey buzzard is, but it's probably one of the biggest birds that we see around here. It has a red kind of a face and a big yellow beak and a wingspan that can be between 4 and 5 feet, maybe even 6 feet. And there's about 12 of them that hang around the pastures here eating some of the horses' hay. But this big dog just landed on the other side of the glass window in my radio studio. And I could have virtually reached out and touched him had it not been for the glass. But I don't think he could see me, but he reminded me of a young teenage boy as he groomed himself and he was looking in the mirror on the window. But he didn't know I was on the other side. But it was kind of an interesting interaction just at the break. But let's get back to buying cars. Make sure you always drive the car for an extended period of time that you're going to buy. And folks, I love many of the dealers and I do business with many of the dealers, but there are a lot of things that I'd like to warn you about. We needed a van not too long ago, and we had decided that the Chrysler minivan and the deluxe model with sliding doors on both sides and captain's chairs was the appropriate vehicle for us to take customers home in. So it's a 6-passenger, it has front and rear air, it has all the fancy-dancy stuffs. And so I challenged my daughter, and I said, Andy, if you're going to go out and hunt this, and she was looking at the Hondas and the Chryslers and the Fords and stuff, she said, I said to her, I want you to buy it for sticker. And so I want you to just buy it for the sticker. And that means the vehicle plus sales tax and license. Now, there's going to be some dock fees. The dock fees can be anywhere between $50 and $1,000. There's going to be all kinds of get-ready fees. I don't want you to pay those. There's going to be a desert protection package or window tint or fancy tires and wheels. I don't want any of that. So there's the challenge, honey. Go out and find a Dodge Caravan, a Grand Caravan, and pay sticker for it. So, I don't know, maybe I had kind of bugged her. Hey, how you doing? And she'd just give me a look, or she'd give me the stare like, go, you know, go back to your office and shut up. So one day she walks up to my office and she goes, come here, look. So I went to the window, I looked down, and there's this brand new Dodge Caravan. And I said, what'd you pay for it? And she said, just exactly what you told me to. And she held up the sticker. She says, that right there. Now, they make lots of profit on the cars, but they also make profit on a lot of parameter stuff. And I went through and looked at some of the motorcycles that I've bought in the last 10 years, and all of them had a dock fee between $100 and $500. That dock fee is to pay somebody to sit down and take your information and generate the title, the registration, and I'm not quite sure that's $500 to $1,000. Nevertheless, you're really shooting to buy something that's the vehicle, tax, and license. Nothing else. Now, I'm going to tell you a funny story that it was humorous to me. A friend of mine called me. Few people have my cell phone, but he does. And he says, there's this special Subaru that my son just is, he's approaching 16, and he really wants this fancy Subaru. And we found one in the paper. And I said, okay, so what do you want me to do? And he says, well, just, you know, I want to talk to you about it. And I said, well, just go look at it. So he says, I already called about it, and they said it belonged to a little old man, and he died, and it's been sitting in the garage, and it's cherry, and blah, 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 the stereotypical stuff. And so I said, you know, just go look at it. And I said, when you get there, call me, and I'll blue book it for you. So he does. And he says, this is what happened. I walked into the office, or into the lobby, and the guy goes, how can I help you? And he says, I'm here to look at this fancy Subaru. And he goes, oh, did you just call? And he said, no. And he goes, oh, he says, we've had so many callers. Let me go see where you're at in queue, because you're going to have to wait your turn. So they stood there for a few minutes, and then he comes back and he goes, hey, come on, come on. There's an opening. Come on. So sit down in my office. This is a true story, according to him. And he's a cop, so I'm going to trust him. So they sit down, and they start negotiating. He calls me, and I said, that's got a $5,000, $5,500 low book, and they want $11,000 for it. And he goes, yeah, but the guy keeps getting on the phone. Hey, I'm with somebody. No, I'm with somebody that's interested. Just have him sit in line. Just, and he's making up all these phone calls. And I'm convinced it's the guy next door calling him, in the cubicle next door. So anyway, then he calls me back and he goes, okay, we're down to 7,200 plus everything else is going to bring it up to about 9,000. And I said, let me get this straight. They got an $11,000 car that they've advertised that's supposed to be this 16-year-old dream boy's car. And they've got all these people in the lobby waiting to buy it. And now all of a sudden they went from 11,000 to 7,000 for you, even though there's all these people in the lobby waiting to buy that car or to look at that car or to drive that car. I said, that doesn't even make sense. So I think you're getting scammed. And if I were you, I'd offer him a stupid number like $5,500 plus tax, plus license, out the door, write you a check right now, or otherwise I'll see you later. I don't think that happened, but folks, you have to, when that little voice inside of your chest is yapping at you, you got to listen. When you walk in and they give you that bum's rush about, oh, it's a special car, you got to stand in line. The line starts over there. Well, those four people over there, and then those six people here, and that two person, they're all waiting for the same car. All that kind of stuff, you have to get through that, and you have to be prepared to walk away. But just here's the key. You can't walk away without a specific number, a specific write your check for number, a specific finance number, period, because you can't compare unless you use that number. Out-the-door number. Always hunt the out-the-door number. How much is it going to be at the end of the day?
2 minutes.
I want to talk about that now. Because they'll throw in an aftermarket warranty in there that's going to add $800 a month or a year to the car, or it could add $3,000 or $4,000 to the top price of the car. So I want to know, be specific, give me a list, and tell me what the final price is. And that's the way to do it. Okay, who we got, Gil?
We have Dennis.
Dennis, good morning. How can I help you?
Well, good morning, Mark. Can you hear me with my voice?
Yes, sir, I can.
Okay, I've had a hospitalization, and they put a tube down my throat and ran my voice.
Okay.
So I'm not going to be able to. I'm not going to be able to be an opera singer anymore.
Well, anyway, I'm glad to hear that.
After listening to what you've been saying here, I think I'm. You're talking about new cars and buying cars, and I actually have a car problem, and I think that might be a challenge for you. But I got a 1980 Mercedes-Benz 450 SL, and for some reason, the fuel injection is overflooding the fuel injectors, and there's gasoline down in the crankcase. So, I mean, we didn't run it yet. That's what we found when we tried to start it. Is there a remedy for that? And it sounds like it might be too expensive.
I can tell you exactly where to go to the most seasoned Mercedes-Benz technician I've ever met in my life. A guy who, in the past, we've called him, and I think his record is 9 out of 10 where he diagnosed over the phone. Now, he's not going to do that for you or anybody else because he makes money in the bays. But and you might have to drive to North Scottsdale, but there's a guy up there that owns a shop called Goodies. Goodies. G-O-O-D-Y-S. He works on is Mercedes. And not too long ago, I called him about a transmission problem. And he told me, ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta, and he asked me a bunch of questions, technical questions that most people can't answer. And so we went back and forth, and I said to the customer, you know what, I'm going to send you to Goodies because I don't want to take the risk. We're talking about a $3,000 risk here. And he goes, well, if you can fix it for $3,000, I'll take it. And I said, I'm not going to take the risk. I want you to go to Goodies. So Goody called me the next day, and he goes, I get mad when you send me cars and you don't give me the right symptoms. And I said, I gave you the symptoms that I had, buddy. I got those myself. And he started laughing, and he goes, you gave me good enough symptoms where I diagnosed it. And when he brought it in, I drove it and verified the diagnosis. I fixed it, and the bill was only $2,200. And I said, but you quoted me three. And he goes, well, I know I did because I wanted to overbid it because you always do the same. And you come in under it, and you're a hero. And I said, okay, so you made both of us a hero for $2,200. And he goes, fixed. Guaranteed fixed. And I said, okay, so I don't know how to fix your Mercedes, but when it runs rich, on any fuel-injected car, when it runs rich, it's normally a fuel pressure regulator that's the diaphragm's blown, so we're aspirating unmetered gasoline, or we've got an injector that's stuck wide open, or we've got some kind of fuel flow that we don't expect. And it could very well be that you overfilled the fuel tank and we sucked a bunch of raw fuel forward in the evaporative system when we're supposed to just suck the vapor, and all of a sudden we get about a half a gallon of gasoline, and then it fills the canister, and then it runs rich for a very long time, or at least until we get the canister out and get it cleaned up. So I'm going to give you the very best advice I can possibly give you is make an appointment and go see Goody and tell him this. For two reasons, tell him this. Salem says that there's no way you can fix this car. Here's the method to my madness. First of all, I don't make a dime on your car. Not one cent. I'm never going to ask him for anything. He's not going to spiff me money. He's not going to give me 2% of the bill, 10% of the bill. He's not going to do that. And if he does, I'm not taking it. And if he insists and leaves it on my desk, I'm going to donate it to charity. So this isn't about me. But it allows a nice way for you to say to him, I'm a referral from Mark Salem. That adds a little bit of pressure to him, and I don't mind that. And that's what I would do if I were you.
Oh, that's wonderful, wonderful advice. And you're the first guy I've talked to that's actually come up with any reasonable explanation for this phenomenon. But I put all brand new injectors in it, and they are still all of them overflow.
Okay.
And of course, I put gasoline down in the crankcase. But, man, this is really good news.
Okay.
I'm going to call Goody and see what I can do.
All right. Mercedes-Benz has an unusual way to deliver pressurized fuel to the injectors. It's a Bosch system, and it's not necessarily a real popular one. And I would say probably one out of 30 or 40 fuel injection systems is a copy or something that looks like Mercedes. So if you've put injectors in it, we eliminate that, but we still got a fuel pressure regulator, and we still got a pump. And somewhere along the line, we are aspirating, we're sucking raw fuel where we shouldn't. So Goody may have to run a couple of tests, but I promise you he's going to give you an estimate, and he's going to tell you what it is. Whether or not you accept the estimate is fine with me, but he'll know what it is. He's a good guy. Now, why isn't he on my list? He says, I'd love to be on your list, but I'm way too busy, and sending me more business is not going to be productive for my shop. And I said, I understand that. But it doesn't keep me from sending people with Mercedes to Goody's up in North Scottsdale. Thank you very much, Dennis. Thank you very much for that. It's 20 minutes after the hour of 11. I'm going to take a three-minute break. The lines are wide open, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. And Goody, if you're listening to me, why don't you call in, 602-508-0960, and diagnose his 1980 450 SL that's aspirating raw fuel. So 602-508-0960. Gil's answering the phones. Tell him that you have the diagnosis for the 450 SL, and we'll get you on the air. We'll be back in a minute. Four minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. Let me do some business real quick, and we're going to get back to the phones. Folks, there's a lot of gray-haired guys out there that started with the 40s and the 50s cars and have gone all the way through to port fuel injection, fancy computers, and all that kind of stuff. And those of us that have been able to travel that path understand fundamentals next to no one else. So it's quite a job and quite a feat to go from carburetors to fuel injection and to cars with no distributor and to air conditioning systems that like we've never seen before and transmissions that have 8 speeds. So there's a big difference, but unless you have the fundamental knowledge, you won't make that jump. And that's why automatic transmission exchange in Phoenix is so important to me. Since 1968, Phil and his staff have been doing transmissions. Phil was brought up in the Power Glides, the very first kind of transmissions, automatic transmissions GM came out with. So they've got these old Power Glides all the way to the brand new 8-speed electronic shift transmissions that monitor engine vacuum, engine fuel ratios, engine timing, all that kind of stuff, and speed and RPM, everything. So if you live in Phoenix, Automatic Transmission Exchange is at 40th Street in Washington. Phil's been around a long time, and there's a good chance he can probably have one of his staff or him take a ride in your car and get doggone close about what it is and what needs to be done. I understand you got Goody on the line.
No, not yet. He's not called.
He hasn't called in, but Joel has. And Joel, good morning to you. How can I help you?
Well, I got a question for you. In the future, there's going to be very multitudes of automated cars. What kind of master mechanics will you need to take care of cars that are self-driving cars? What kind of training will they have to go through? And there'll be a whole new world out there for them. Thank you.
It won't be. It won't be a whole new world out there because computers are running your car today, and we understand that. I'll give you an example. The backup camera is going to come on with the when you put it in reverse. And the backup camera has radar on it, and it says at 6, I'm going to go tick, 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 at 6 feet away, and at 4 feet, it's going to go tick, 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 and then at 3 feet away or before you crash, it's going to go beep. So we already know how to test all that. So you have the autonomous cars, and the autonomous cars are going to basically have radar 360 degrees. They're going to be watching cars around you and stuff like that. And when the car has a problem, then it's going to take it out of autonomous mode and force you to drive it. And then you're going to bring it into the shop, and we're going to talk to the computer, and the computer's going to say, I lost sight of the right side of the car. And so you take the car and you start looking at all the different sensors and you say, talk to me, talk to me. Oh, you're alive? Okay, thank you very much. And then you get to one and you go, oh, come on, talk to me. Nope. Do you see this? Do you see as I put a piece of wood along your radar sensor? Yes, I don't see it. And so then you crawl underneath the car and you go, oh, well, somebody ran over a curb and cut the wire harness. So you put the wire harness back on and then you tell the computer, do a self-check. And it says, oh, I see all the radar sensors now. Good. Then now you're autonomous. So we already do that today. We already have cause and effect. We already know what the computer's thinking. And you know what? How we talk to the computer?
2 minutes.
In numbers, languages. So the computer understands 1 through 5. 1 is parked, and 5 is supersonic speed. And everything in between is there. So even though it's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, we're going to divide 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 into 1,000 different markers. So the computer understands voltage, and we understand the voltage and the computer. So when it's running rich, the O2 sensors are screaming, 5, 5, 5, and the computer turns down the faucet for gas. But if it's saying, give me more fuel, I don't have any power, then the computer opens up the faucet for gasoline. And it's all in numbers. The communication and the language is simply numbers. And as long as you know what the numbers mean, you're going to be able to fix cars. Alrighty, who do we have?
We have Goody.
Oh, okay. And Joel, I know that you had hung up, and I hope that answered your question. But the answer is none of us are afraid of autonomous cars. We're going to be able to fix them. Okay. Hey, Goody. I don't know if you heard, but the guy had an 80 Mercedes-Benz 450 SL. He had put injectors in it, and it's running really, really rich. And I guessed fuel pressure regulator. I guessed something with the injection pump. But it's running really rich, and I also guess that maybe he had and he filled up the tank too full and flooded the evaporative system, and it's running rich. How close was I, Goody?
Oh, all those are possible, but unlikely.
That's okay. I told him up front I wasn't a Mercedes guy. What do you think it is?
Well, that car's got CIS injection system, which is actually pretty easy to troubleshoot.
Okay.
We see the same problems over and over again. That's not a normal one that we see often, the particular one. The first thing you have to ask if somebody actually adjusted it. But things that come to mind, if they're getting raw fuel in the intake, the most common would be a bad fuel distributor.
Okay. Okay.
But there's the other things that come to mind is a cold start valve stuck open, a pressure dampener with a bad diaphragm in it.
Okay, now that's a fuel pressure regulator, right?
There's two diaphragms by the fuel distributor, and they both have diaphragms in them with a vacuum line to lead off if something were to leak out of them.
Okay, and folks, what he's talking about, there's a trampoline between two big caverns, and the trampoline kind of controls fuel pressure, but when we get a hole in the trampoline, then the engine just aspirates raw fuel, and so we go in and we fix the trampoline. Is that close, Goody?
That's close. And they also use, as a fuel pressure regulator, they use a warm-up regulator to control the control pressure. And if that was stuck in a wrong position, it's going to run real rich.
Okay. Diagnostic is between what and what? What are you going to charge the diagnostic?
Usually can be done in less than an hour.
No, we need numbers. We need numbers. Is an hour between $25 and $35?
$115 to maybe twice that, to about $230.
Okay.
Depending what we're running to.
So $25 to $35 is out of the question?
Totally out of the question.
Okay.
We'd open the hood for that.
Okay. Well, we don't talk hours here, and I know that you don't know that, but it's okay. We don't talk hours because that's too confusing. We just talk dollars. That's why I was razzing you about the dollars, and I guess $25 to $35, but I didn't do that in public for you. All righty. Thank you, Goody.
Okay.
Thank you very much. And when we come back, we're going to take your calls, and I'm sorry that I'm a little bit behind, but Rick's first, Bob second, guaranteed. We'll be right back. Oh. 33 minutes after the hour, 11 o'clock, we're going to go right to the phones like we promised, and we're going to start with Bob. Bob, thank you for holding. How can I help you?
Hi, Mark. How are you?
Good, good.
Hey, I got a 2002 Buick Century, and it went to emissions and got a not ready.
Okay.
I had changed the battery out on June 21st, went about 900 miles, and still getting the same thing.
Okay, do you still have the check engine light coming on?
Never had that come on.
Okay, all right. What's happened here is when you change the battery out, of course, the reason why we're doing emissions like we're doing now is because everybody would disconnect their battery, and that would delay the illumination of the check engine light, and then they would pass emissions when they really shouldn't. So now we're looking at what we call the monitor, the ready monitor, and obviously yours hasn't reset. I want to tell you something about the ready monitor. There is a process that you can find on the internet, but you're going to have to get somebody to go with you, and it's a very difficult thing to pull off. For instance, and just I'm this is tongue in cheek, but it's this silly. You have to start.
I think I've got. I think I know what you're talking about. That 9-step deal.
Yeah, and you have to do every one of them. And if you miss a step, or if it says to do it for 10 seconds, and you don't do it for 10 seconds, it's going to throw you out and start you all over again. The best thing you can do is drive that thing everywhere you go as much as you can over the next week. And there's a very good chance that if you can put a couple hundred miles on it in the next 10 days to 2 weeks, that the monitor will reset. And your garage can look at the monitor for you and tell you whether it's reset and you're good to go to the emissions, okay?
I've gone like 1,300 miles and they check it, and I still got a not ready on the EVAP and a not ready on the heated O2.
Okay, well, you have two problems there. And even though you say you didn't have a check engine light, those two codes are there. And when you disconnected the battery, it should have shut those, turned those. If those codes were fake codes, then it would have cleared them and stayed. So now you have to go back in and you have to figure out the EVAP problem and the heated O2 sensor problem, because those two aren't going to reset. If you had a clear conscience at the beginning before you disconnected your battery, you'd have a clear conscience afterwards. But clearly you didn't. So you got to go get the EVAP and the heated O2 sensor. And to be honest with you, the diagnosis on one and the other is pretty much the same. Pretty much the same. Okay? That's the best I can offer
thank you.
You,
sir.
Okay. And Gail. Gail, good morning. How can I help you?
Hi. Good morning, Mark. We are going to have, our daughter is going to be driving in about a year and a half, and we're starting to think about that whole question. So we were wondering, in your opinion, is it still a good idea to teach kids how to start out with manual? And I was also wondering, in the times we live on now and their phones are attached to them at the hip, if learning how to drive a manual first would keep them more engaged and focused on the road as they're new out there behind the wheel.
Yeah, that is a big problem. You've hit the nail on the head. It is a very big problem for parents. I can tell you that the only person in my family that can't drive a stick shift is the lady who runs my company now, my daughter Andy.
Yeah.
And we tease her all the time because all the other kids learned how to drive a stick. And someday she will learn how to drive a stick. I think she tried not too long ago on the Corvette, and I think she got first and second down. Yes, the stick shift will keep their hands busy, but they have hands-free capability phones, so they can set it on the dash and still talk. Well, for me, I would monitor them on Find Friends, and I would look and see when they're moving in their car, and then I would write it down, and then I would look at their phone, and if they had erased all the phone calls, then, of course, I'd just take their keys away. But there are different ways for you to die or to be able to keep track of them, but frankly, if you can't get them to do what you want them to do, then you're going to have to go to plan B, which is punishment. And for me, it was just take the keys away, because that's the worst thing you can do to a 16-year-old boy or a girl.
Right.
And as far as buying a car, I would buy a car with as little and few seats as I can. I'd probably get a two-door.
That was another question of mine.
Okay.
Yeah, so her dream car is a Jeep, and I was thinking, well, Jeeps, I wondered how safe they really are, tip factor and things, and also, but I did know, you know, they do make two-seaters.
Okay, well, I can answer that. I'm not going to buy my kid a Suburban because it sits nine kids, and that means eight of them are going to sue me when my kid crashes a Suburban. So I gave all my girls a pickup truck with two. I bought them an old Chevy or an old Ford or an old Toyota pickup truck with two seats in it. That way, there's only one other person that's family's going to sue me when they crash.
Yeah,
so and that means there can't be 15 people in the vehicle telling them what to do at one time.
Mm-hmm.
So if they can't say no and shut up or stop and kick the person out, like most kids and most girls won't and can't, then so that's what I did. I got airbags. I got small pickup trucks. You can get automatic or standard, whatever you want. But I put I bought nothing but a conventional cab with bucket seats. That's what I did with all three of my kids.
Oh, I'm so glad I got to call you today about that.
Okay.
And do you recommend any certain makes or models?
No, because they're gonna drive by Braille the first year anyway. So I'd buy them something used, something that had as little owners as possible. Some old gray-haired guy that wants to get rid of his pickup truck that has all the receipts in a three-ring notebook. That's the kind of car you want. But I moved them up, you know, after they were 18 years old. I helped them move up to something that they wanted. Mm-hmm. But when they were they lived under my roof, they drove cheap. Now, the girls ended up with big Blazers, and Alan ended up with a fast Camaro. But during the time that they were 16, 17 years old, they drove bucket seat pickup trucks. I got to run, but thank you very much for that question. I don't think I've ever had that question, but it did give me an opportunity to give you the very best advice that worked for Mark Salem. And that's something I can offer you. We're going to be back in just a minute. 44 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock every Saturday, we're here from 10 to 12 talking about car and car repair stuff. My website is called MarkSalem.com, MarkSalem.com, Salem spelled like the cigarette, S-A-L-E-M, or the Witch Trials, or Salem, whatever, Mark with a K, Mark at Mark, and my email address is Mark at MarkSalem.com. If you have a question during the week, you can always send it to me, and if you give me a phone number, I'll call you back, but it's going to come from a blocked cell phone for obvious reasons. There's some good shops on my website, and Larry Harker's Auto is one of them. They've been in business since 1967. Bob and Ellen own Larry Harker's Auto. And Bob is one of the finest diagnosticians that I've ever met in my life. He just has such a fundamental grasp on cars and trucks and gas and diesels and stuff like that. He understands them. So when I hear somebody on the west side, or actually somebody anywhere in central, north, and west and east, I'll say to them, you need to take that car to Harker's. And the story will start out with, I've had my car to every shop in town, and nobody can fix this. Well, you take it to Larry Harker's Auto and leave it with Bob, and he'll find it, and he'll fix it. So they've been around a long time, 38th Avenue and Indian School. Alan runs the front counter. Bob runs the shop, and Bob, that's where he's at every day, is in the shop. So it's not like he's a figurehead. He actually, his fingernails are dirty, and you'll know that when you shake his hand. So that's Larry Harker's Auto. Tell you about another one, too, and this is strictly diesel. It's up on North Phoenix. It's on the I-17 and Pinnacle Peak Road. Nate owns Strictly Diesel. He does great work on the Chevy, Fords, and Dodge diesels. He doesn't do school buses, and he doesn't do big trucks. But he is a wizard when it comes to diesel repair and diagnosis. Nate stands about 17 feet tall, and he's got hands bigger than a tennis racket. But he's the nicest young man you've ever met, and he's exactly what you hope that your daughter brings home someday. Somebody this kind, this gentle, and this smart. So if you've got a diesel and nobody else can fix it, then Strictly Diesel Service and Repair. And they also have a website, and they sell parts on the website. So if you want to compare cold air kits, or you want to compare different parts to make your diesel run a little bit better, a little faster, or even get better fuel economy, then go to strictlydiesel.com. Alrighty, I'm going to tell you a quick story, and this is a true story, and I'm a good storyteller anyway. So my son turned 16 years old, and my wife just called me and reminded me that I did not give him a two-door car when he was 16. But Alan had worked at the shop for pretty much his, you know, younger life. So him and I went to an auction, and they had an IROC Camaro there. And so we bought the IROC Camaro, Alan did with his money. And we took it to the shop, and we fixed it up and made sure everything would work and stuff. And I gave him the keys, and I said, you're going to get in trouble with this, and when you do, you're going to be in big trouble. Well, no matter what the policeman says, I'm going to be madder than he is. So fast forward, I don't know, a year and a half later, he behaves himself with no problem. A year and a half later, I get a call from the Highway Patrol, and they said, we need you to come over here to Warner and I-10, and we have your son. And I said, is he okay? Yes, he isn't. So I drive over there. And I introduced myself to him, and I says, so what happened? He goes, well, he was drag racing, and he's in big trouble because we're going to give him a drag racing ticket. And I said, good, that's what he needs. So I went over to him, and I said to him, you might as well just kiss that car goodbye because you're not going to have it. It's gone. And I said, you know, when we're talking, you know, dad to son. I said, what were you racing? And he goes, oh, never mind. And I said, no, what were you racing? And he goes, it's not important. I said, what were you racing? You only get three questions. You only get three chances to answer the question. And then it's doubled. You're in double trouble. He goes, that little Honda Accord over there. And I go, well, let me get this straight. You got an IROC Camaro, and you're racing a four-cylinder Honda? I said, that's about as stupid as I've ever heard. So anyway, I take his driver's license. I take his car away from him, and we have to go to court. So I go to court with him, and I said to the judge, it's an 8-point ticket. He'll lose his license for a year. But I have middle ground if you would just hear me out. He says, I'm all ears. And I said, I have reprogrammed his car where he can't go more than 30% throttle
I shut the fuel off at 31%. He can't go faster than 45 miles an hour because at 46 miles an hour, I shut the fuel off. So he can't go fast, and he can't go, and he can't even spin the back tires because he can't do it with 30% throttle. And he says, I forgive me, but I don't believe you. And I said, well, come on outside, and I'll give you the keys to the car. And so he says, well, I got a couple more things to do, and then I will. So I give him the keys to the car, and he goes, drives, and he comes back, and he goes, how'd you do that? And I said, I'm not going to tell you, but my question to you is if you let him speed, do a speeding ticket, and he'll pay the fine, and he'll go to school and do all that stuff, I'll leave that software in there until when? And he goes, will you leave it in for 6 months? And I said, I'll do whatever you want. He says, 6 months. And he has to behave himself in 6 months, because if he gets any more tickets, then the deal's off. So I said, fine. So he went 6 months, but you know what the biggest deal was for him? He says, Dad, I can't even go up paintball shooting in North Phoenix because I can't get on the freeway because it'll only do 45 miles an hour. Oh, but those were the good old days when, boy, we could pirate those cars like there's no tomorrow. So I took it back to him at the end of 6 months, and I said to him, here's the prom I took out, and this is the prom that I'm going to put back in. So I'm going to give him the car the way it is. For 6 months, he's had that prom. And so I think he had to go to school, he had to pay a big fine, and he had 3 points on his driver's license. That was the extent of our experience with him. And he was my oldest child, and so that's the reason why the girls got two-door pickup trucks. And they had air conditioning and they had airbags, but they only had one other seat. And I'm blessed because neither one of my girls decided to drag race a Honda Accord. Nevertheless, that's the most important thing I ever had to do was kids' cars because they paid for them. But to be involved in the purchase of your kids' cars. And I'm a big fan of wrapping the kids in as much metal as you can. Back in the 90s when my kids were started to drive, we didn't have the speed collisions and we didn't have the people dying like we've got now. So I think I'd get something with as many airbags as possible. That certainly would be something that I would think about. I would also limit the amount of people that could be in the car, because the more people that are in the car, the more stupid suggestions come from the peanut gallery about what the driver should do and not do. And so those are kind of things as a father of three and a grandfather of five. Those are the kinds of things that the young adults probably should look at, especially with boys. And certainly my girls weren't completely immune to trouble with their cars. But most of the time it was just because they were 6.5 seconds late on their curfew. And the worst part about it is all during the 70s, their dad was a policeman. And so there wasn't really a lot that they could pull over the wool over my eyes, because I had friends that would look up stuff for me back then. Can't do that now, but back then. So those are the kinds of things that you young kids and young parents are going to have to deal with. But airbags are important. And seating positions are important. And the last thing I would ever buy for a 16-year-old young man or a woman is a Suburban that holds 9 people. Certainly it's a big metal object and they're really safe in that. But there's, if it's a 9-passenger Suburban, there's 8 people telling the driver what to do. And I think that's a bad idea. And like I said earlier, if there's a car wreck, there's going to be 8 of the families that are going to be suing you. So I think to minimize your exposure to lawsuits and minimize your exposures to real negative stuff, then, small cars with one other seat is a good idea. When it comes to car repair, you're going to be told that you need stuff from no matter who you do business with. So dealers, independent stores, chain stores, 1 or 2 man shops, all those places will tell their customers that you need to have this. And I'm going to give you 3 things to respond. And this is called self-defense for car expense. For you ladies, I'm talking to the ladies now. If you're told that you need a fuel injection flush, and it's $199, $299, I think you should smile and say, let me get my owner's manual and you show me where it says that is a maintenance stop. That's some maintenance item I need to have. And you're going to see somebody stumbling and stepping and fetching because it's not in the owner's manual. And that's just made up. The same goes for a transmission service. You need a transmission service at 30,000 miles. Can you show me in my owner's manual where it says that? Because most cars today are between 75 and 100,000 miles. So the 30,000 miles might go good for a 70 or an 80 or a 90s car, but since 2000, it's not going to fly. And last but not least, you can say to them, what symptoms do I have today that you're going to fix? So I need a tune-up. What symptoms do I have today that you're going to fix with a tune-up? And this is what you're going to hear. That's what you're going to hear, because those are the three of the hardest questions in the world to answer. You're standing there in front of a service writer who's not a technical person. He's the parrot for the grizzly technician in the back room. So the grizzly technician says they need upper control arm bushings. So he or she bids upper control arm bushings to you. So if your husband's there, your wife's there, you say, well, what symptoms do I have today that you're going to fix? Now, if it's a bona fide issue, and at good shops, you're going to hear, I bet you have a clunk when you come to a stop, and I bet if you take off kind of rapidly, you have another clunk, and the clunk is in the front end. And if the customer goes, I do have that, and they say, well, that's what I'm going to fix, because that's exactly the symptoms associated with either upper or lower control arms. We got a clunk on stop and a clunk off takeoff. That's the way it is. So there are symptoms. You need all your motor mounts. What symptom are you going to fix? You know what the biggest symptom on a motor mount is? Is it vibrates in drive or reverse. Your car vibrates in drive or reverse. You're just sitting there. You're not moving. The car's warmed up. You put it in reverse, and there's a vibration in the car that you can feel. Feel through the seat of your pants. Feel through the steering wheel. You can see the mirrors vibrating a little bit. You put it in neutral, the vibration goes away. Or it can also be drive. You put it in drive, the vibration is there. You put it in neutral, and the vibration goes away. So if you need new motor mounts and you come in, if I were the technician, I would say to the service writer, talk to him about a reverse to neutral vibration or a drive to neutral vibration, and show him. So when they say you need a motor mount, or you need two motor mounts, or you need three of the four, or whatever they say, what symptom are you going to fix? Well, let me show you. And you get in the car and you put it in drive and you go feel that vibration. Yeah, I noticed that. It goes away in neutral. I haven't noticed that. Well, come here. You sit here and I'm going to tell you what to do. Okay, I understand what you're saying. Okay, I'm going to fix that symptom. So those are the kinds of things. And last but not least, this is the most misunderstood thing in the whole wide world. And it just happened to me the other day because I was on the freeway and I saw some people with out-of-state plates off to the side of the road. So I stopped. I said, what's up? And he says, well, we're overheating. And I said, okay, let me look. And I popped the hood, and there's no leaks. And I grabbed the upper radiator hose, and it was hot. We were coming up Slate Creek Hill. And I said, can I start it? And he says, yeah. I said, well, I'm a mechanic, so I'm just asking if I can start it. Yeah, go ahead. So I started up, and the gauge is at 3/4. And I says, well, I thought you said it was overheating. He goes, well, it is. And I said, no, this car is designed to run between 1/2 and 3/4. Besides, you just came up the mountain. So it's going to run on the hot side of 1/2 to 3/4. And he says, well, I didn't know that. And I said, okay, well, you're at the top of the hill, so for the next 5 miles, you're going to be on downhill slide, so it's going to cool off really fast, so you just keep going. I promise you, there's no water on the ground. Your overflow is full. The upper hose is hot, and it's firm, which means it's holding pressure. And I'm perfectly happy that the gauge is at 3/4. So it was a man and a woman and three kids. And I followed them down the hill to make sure everything was okay. But the most misunderstood part of this whole thing is where the needle should run. And there's just way too many people that say, my car's overheating, and the first question is, well, where are you at? Well, it's at 1/2. Well, that's not overheating. Well, it never ran there before. Every car made has been designed to run between 3/8 and 3/4. Some of the older cars are going to run a little less than 1/2, but everything since 1996, maybe, 1991 to 1996, that has a 195 thermostat in it, that thing needs to run between 1/2 and 3/4. That's where it belongs. We know that a hotter motor will be a more efficient motor, and it'll last longer. So that's why in the 70s, cars needed to be rebuilt in the engines at 100,000 miles, and we had a car in the other day that had 511,000 miles on it. And obviously it was the newer model cars. mark@marksalem.com is my email address. If you have a question, give me the year, make, and model of your car. Tell me what the symptoms are, and I'll help you the best I can. My name is Mark Salem. Please wear your seatbelt. Please drive safe, and I'll see you next week.